is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, October 31st, 2025. I'm Brianne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. It's Islamic History Month in Canada, and this week on the show, we're joined by Sadaf Hassan and Sarah Sahagian to discuss Muslim representation in Canadian pop culture. In this conversation, the two explore common trends and stereotypes surrounding Muslim characters in the media, discuss the figures who are offering more nuanced and multifaceted representations, and share some of their favorite books, musicians, television shows, and films that showcase Muslim talent. Here is that conversation. Take a listen.
Hello! And for this week's episode, we're going to do a very exciting interview with Rabble.ca board member and accomplished journalist, Sadaf Hassan. I have worked with Sadaf for years, and I am delighted to have her here to talk to us about representations of Muslim people in popular culture. Welcome, Sadaf.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me, and what a kind intro.
Well, we are thrilled to talk to you today. So you have done extensive work in the arts and entertainment field of journalism. So I wanted to pick your brain and just discuss, first of all, what do you think are the trends in representations where Muslim communities are concerned? And I know that there's no Muslim monolith, and it's something that's probably, you'll talk about that too. But what have you seen as the dominant trends when Muslim characters are on screen, or when Muslim recording artists are releasing music into the world or writing books?
I mean, I think overall, and I hate to start off on a little bit of a pessimistic note, but it's the realistic note. So I think there's still quite a bit of work to be done. I think for the longest time, maybe spanning, I would say, from the late 90s, especially in the 00s and up till now, Muslims get pretty limited representation, and when they do, it's very stereotypical. It tends to hinge on either their faith exclusively or bigotry they might face. So essentially, the character is really, really tied to what their faith is. And I think at the same time, we have to see portrayals where Muslims are represented as either the villain or the victim, right? So when I think of the villain, I often think of shows like, for instance, 24 or even Homeland, which I had hoped would go in a different direction, but kind of fell into a little bit of the same trap. So there's elements of that where Muslim folks will often play someone like a terrorist and who's kind of invaded the American space. And what does that mean? And then other times they'll be victims of their own faith and of their own people, their own community. And I think we're supposed to be thankful for it, but I don't feel that way. I don't think that's really an evolution. But I do think we're having moments over the past couple of years, even, where things are showing more promising representation. I'm really excited about it. So you mentioned other elements of pop culture. I think it's really fabulous that we have someone like Nemesis, for instance, who is an Ontario-born Canadian musician. She's so wonderful. I'm such a fan. She's Palestinian. She's Muslim. She wears a hijab. She is such wonderful representation. She's been doing so well. And I think she's a really good marker of where we're at right now, because when she actually showed her support for Palestine, she was dropped by her big record label, and then she ended up going out independently, and now she's a huge hit globally, which is amazing. And I think it just shows when you push back, you fight back, you can kind of form this whole new message and remind people why it's so important to have this representation. But she's just one of many, and we're seeing more and more for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm wondering where you think, just as a Canadian entertainment journalist, Canada is vis-a-vis the rest of the world when it comes to nuanced representations of people from the Muslim faith. Do you think we're ahead? Do you think we're behind? I'm curious to hear your assessment.
Okay, well, I'm going to hit you with the stat, and the stat is very American, but it's pretty, I would say it's pretty in line with Canadian representation. We don't even have statistics like these, unfortunately, but this is one of the more recent, more valid ones and significant ones. 2021 USC Annenberg Inclusion Initiative study found that less than 2% of movie characters have speaking roles that are Muslim. That's alarming, right? And we don't obviously have the same level of film production, but I would say that the numbers tend to line up. And the same goes for generally the entire pop culture sphere. So we don't see as many characters in TV and movies. We don't see as many faces in music. And that's really unfortunate because I do think it makes a difference. However, what I do think we have that really stands out is a lot of key figures who are really trying to make an effort. So, for instance, in the UK, you'll have Riz Ahmed, who is so wonderful, very handsome, and a really wonderful bit of representation, and who's been fighting for more global representation. In Canada, we have people like Nemesis, who is pushing that for that in every element, but we also have people like Bilal Beg, who was, if you remember, the first trans South Asian actor to lead a show here, which was sort of on CBC. Wonderful show. So good. It's now on Netflix, so anyone can watch. Zirka Nawaz, who actually created Little Mosque. Little Mosque on the Prairie, and she also has a show currently that's self-titled. It's called Zirka. It's so good. And she even wrote a really great novel that I highly recommend called Jamila Green Ruins Everything. Sorry, you would love it.
She is hilarious. And Little Mosque is a show that I really appreciated because it showed that Islam was a spectrum, right? And different practice their beliefs differently, right? I mean, some of the women wore hijabs, some didn't. There were conversations about that, but everyone at the end of the day was Muslim. And I found that really refreshing.
Yeah, it's so huge. And I think that's the key thing that we need ultimately is wider representation, because Muslims also can look very different. And so, for instance, we also have Mustafa the Poet, who is also more of a global star at this point, and who has been doing so much advocacy for Palestine right now too, and put out this amazing single in dedication to what's happening. And he is Canadian Sudanese, because yes, again, we can all look very different. Muslims can be brown, they can be black, they can be white, they can be all sorts of different types of people, and we never get to see that representation. We also have Janelle Amasso, who was a really notable anchor who wore a hijab on TV, which was really seminal, right? That even makes a big difference. And we have a filmmaker like Fawzia Mirza, who recently, last couple of years, she released an incredible movie called The Queen of My Dreams, which was really also wonderful queer Muslim representation. So ultimately, what I'm trying to say is we have these key figures who are pushing for more and more content, more and more representation. And as you said, a wider spectrum, because it does exist, and we're really fun and cool and funny and talented too, and more than the villain or the victim. And so I think Canada's doing a good job in supporting figures like those. We just need more of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm even reminded of, so Malala Yousafzai has made a comeback.
Yes.
One of the things that is so lovely is she talks about how multifaceted she is, right?
Yeah. I mean,
yes. What happened to her when she was a child growing up in Swat Valley, Pakistan? Obviously, that's going to always be an important part of her.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously her advocacy for girls and children is an important part of her story. But she's also funny. She loves weightlifting.
Yes.
Right. She can't cook. She makes jokes about that. She is a person who's complicated and multifaceted, has lots of interests, is more than her trauma, is more than being Muslim. Right. I mean, she is Muslim, but is, that's not the only thing she is. And so I've loved seeing her return. And I mean, she is, I hope she sticks around. I hope she gets maybe a TV show or something, because she's just such a delightful young person. And she and her
husband love her
together.
Yeah. Oh, I love that you brought her up as an example. She's such a wonderful icon for Muslim representation. Totally. She has a new memoir out right now. It's called Finding My Way. I highly recommend it. So I actually interviewed her last week. Highlight for me, because I love her. And again, we have very few icons like that. She's also Pakistani like myself. So, you know, it says a lot to be able to have Pakistani to Pakistani interview. We don't often get those moments. And And I talked to her a lot about that, actually, Sarah. And I think it's so fascinating. In this book, she opens up so much about how she balances her faith with also growing up and just discovering how she wants to live her life and what her interests are. So for instance, I'm sure if you know Malala, you'll probably remember the time several years ago where she talked about how she's not a big fan of marriage because in her family and in the culture, there are quite a few examples of people who marry through arrangement and maybe they weren't in love to begin with. And marriage looks very different. It's more of an economic thing. It's more of something that you do to set up a family rather than something that you do for love. And that was not something she fundamentally agreed with. And now, cut to more recently, as you mentioned, she's got this wonderful husband. They are married. And she talks in the book, and I talked with her about how she sort of compromised in that way. And a lot of it was wanting to be able to be kind of fulfill these elements of the faith, but also to keep her parents proud, who are very devout. And at the same time, verifying for herself that her husband is the kind of man that she would even want to marry. In other words, he's a feminist. Neither of them cook. They both get takeout every day.
That's fine. Live the best life, Malala.
Yeah. God knows they can afford it. And he's just wonderful. He doesn't expect her to ascribe to any of those old school traditional ideas of what a wife should be. And anyway, ultimately, what she was saying is it's always interesting and sometimes a struggle trying to figure out what works and what suits you. And one of the things that I asked her was, is it ever a little bit scary to be one of the key figures of Muslim representation? That's a lot of pressure. And I have to imagine, because I feel this way even just as a Toronto journalist, which is nothing compared to her level of platform. But sometimes I get nervous too. You know, you never want to be the one who's putting a whole religion in a bad light by saying just one little thing that can be taken the wrong way. Because that's the other thing. People wait for that. If you're Muslim, if you're brown, if you're marginalized in any way, people are going to grab at the moment that you say it wrong. And she certainly has felt that. And she's been on hot water so many times. And she was saying it's something she just navigates as she goes. And it's always going to be something where she gets in trouble for because people are always going to be waiting for her to mess up. And at the same time, people always wait for Muslims to be in hot water, which is really unfortunate. And maybe it's not the optimistic note that you'd want, but I also appreciated how honest she was being. But that's also what happens when you have very few figures who are representing you. They end up being held to a far tighter and harder expectation and rubric. It's so unfair.
Well, and also the other weird thing is I remember seeing a clip of a late night interview that she did where she was talking about how kids today either think she's dead or like a figure from the 18th century because, well, I mean, I think that has to do with how we teach history and how ephemeral current events are and how we, you know, as a collective consciousness, we don't really remember what happened not even that long ago. She's 28, but yeah. It's really great to see an example of somebody publishing a popular memoir in this space who, I mean, just the fact that she was able to survive trauma and thrive, I think is an inspiration to every single person in the world, but it's just wonderful that she can continue doing her advocacy, but also tell her story and explain that she is more than the trauma that happened to her.
God, yes. And it's such a fun read. I was telling a friend, it reminded me a lot of that Mandy Moore movie, Chasing Liberty, if anybody remembers.
I love that movie.
Of course you do, because I do too, yes. And because, you know, you're kind of, she details so many moments where she has to lose her security and get rid of them so she can go off and have a fun moment without them. And there's one moment where she climbs this tower on campus and nobody, and honestly, I was worried for her reading it. It sounded very dangerous. And she had to outrun them just to be able to do it.
All right, Malala, and, okay.
I know. Where's the movie adaptation, Sarah?
I know. Okay. As a mom, when you just told me that, like sometimes I put on my mom hat. I'm like, Malala, you shouldn't have done that. But okay.
I know, but you know what? That's part of why I like it so much. Because, you know, she talks about a time when she tried a bong for the first time. She tried marijuana for the first time. She talks about accidentally eating ribs and not realizing it was pork and falling in love with ribs. You know, there's so many moments like that. And, you know, dating without telling her parents she was dating and all these sorts of things. And to me, what it tells us is that so many of us, first of all, are not unique. We've all had the same experiences. Yeah. But also that, as you said, there's such a wide spectrum of what a Muslim can look like. And there I don't think personally that there are many perfect Muslims, just like there's no perfect Christian or Catholic or Jewish person. Like, we all operate individually on a spectrum. Yeah. And I think she's been held up to such perfection. And that's part of why people think she's older than she is, because she just seems like she has to be the representation and perfect image of wisdom and doing all the right things and following Islam in the exact perfect way. Nobody is going to do that, especially, I'm sorry to say, if you are growing up in the West and you have other opportunities and other options. I'm so glad she's exploring a little bit.
Do you remember years ago when Malala was still a teen and somebody thought Mindy Kaling was Malala? Like, at the, she was at the Boom Boom Room and she got mistaken for Malala.
No, I did not know.
It's such a racist moment. But it's just, and I think it shows you really how little representation there was of South Asian women. And, I mean, there still isn't enough, but how little there was at the time. And it took her a long time to figure out that this man thought she was Malala. They had an entire conversation where he's like, "I so admire your work." And she's like, "Thanks." He's like, "You've done so many great things and you're so young." And she's like, "Yeah, actually still young. I'm in my 30s. I've got my own show." And it took her a while to realize he thought she was Malala. And then she's like, "Why would Malala be at the Boom Boom Room? Like, she is a child."
Oh my God, I feel for both of them. At the same time, if I was mistaken for either of them, I'd be flattered. But yeah.
Well, I'm fair. It's just like you're getting mistaken for literally a child while at a bar. It's a really weird experience. And it's because someone's racist and knows like one South Asian woman.
Exactly. Because these two also look totally different.
They don't look alike at all.
No.
Not only was Mindy like twice her age at the time, they don't look alike.
Not but in any way.
A compliment. If someone mistakes you for a teenager and you're in your early 30s, like, that's a good day. That's a good day.
I'd be flattered.
So would I. So what would you like to see going forward? How would you like to see the representation of Muslim peoples evolve, particularly in the Canadian climate, right? What would you like to see on the CBC or CTV? What would you like to see in our music industry, in our book industry?
I think for me, I want to see Muslim characters, Muslim actors, Muslim musicians, authors, you name it. I want them to be able to exist and create and just happen to be Muslim, if that makes sense, where their faith is not their whole story and it's not why they're existing and it's not why the art is there. We should be able to have that just in the same way that I feel like everybody else gets to. And this is something you and I just touched on earlier, but I just really want, I think need actually, we all need multifaceted and honestly more subversive depictions. Like, I think in America, we've got Rami, which is such a wonderful, wonderful depiction of modern, what it means to be a modern Muslim, first of all, but also growing up in the West. And like we said about Malala, trying to figure out how it works for you and what it looks like for you. And that was created and stars Rami Yusuf, who is this great American comedian. And I would love if we had a version of that and to see what that's like when you're growing up in Canada. And I don't think it's too different in the way they present it, but I think there are certainly different nuances that I'd love to see. You know, I also think of We Are Lady Parts, which is, and these are all recommendations for everyone listening to. Mm-hmm. And We Are Lady Parts is a really great, hilarious UK sitcom where we see this band of Muslim women and they're all great musicians and they play the guitar and they sing and they're cool and they wear hijabs. And that would be really cool. Like, if we could just destigmatize the hijab. And I think Nemesis has really helped with that. And I think Malala helps with that. But I think we are still very much stuck in a post 9/11 groupthink, if you will. And I think it's been so damaging and I think we're still recovering from it. So yeah, I would love to see us separated from that story. And again, you know, that's an American story, but it's still something that we all feel here even. And here's the other thing. Islamophobia is hitting another peak right now because of what's happening in Palestine. And that's really scary. And I know I've been scared. I know so much of my family is scared and going over to the States is scary. I recently went over to the States just for a little trip, just for fun. And I ended up having a really tough time just getting past the border. That really horrified me. And I know it was because of my name and what I look like. And I don't even wear a hijab, by the way, you know, so imagine what that's like for someone who does, or for someone who represents more of the vision of Islam that people are familiar with. when we have, and I hope we will one day have better representation here, that's just going to help us have an easier time at the border, at the grocery store, at school, like whatever that is. That's why we need it. That's a big reason. It makes such a difference. And also, we're not scary people. We're normal. We're just like everybody else.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for making so many really important points. So do you have any final thoughts? Is there anything that you're enjoying right now that already exists that you haven't mentioned yet that you think that our listeners should check out? Any books, any podcasts, movies or TV shows featuring Muslims where you think, yes, this is great representation?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So everything I shout out, please check it out. And I know you and I love this, Sarah, but Miss Marvel is obviously a great one and probably really accessible if you've got kids. And I think it's so important to have kids tune in. I mentioned Queen of My Dreams, which is wonderful. Another movie that came out around that time is Joyland, which is this really wonderful Pakistani movie. It is in Urdu. You can get subtitles, and it's on Crave in Canada. It's a really, really wonderful depiction also of queer Muslims, and it's just really beautiful and moving. There's so many things that I could recommend, but I think even the names that you know, like Hasan Minhaj, Mahershala Ali, Riz, check out all of the work that they've done. I do want to shout out a couple of things though, Sarah. For instance, one initiative that I was really happy to see, and this just happened this past summer, is Canada's New Narratives Fund. It's so great. And I think if you're an artist, if you create any kind of content, like if it's music, if it's film, if it's books, check it out. They help market, distribute, develop young artists who are Muslim. They funded Nemesis recently. It's such a great initiative. I know Riz has been dedicated to a lot of initiatives like the Pillars Fund in the US. So check that out if you live there. I just want to see more. I want to see more of us. I want to see more of our art and more nuance. And, you know, it takes a lot more to define us than one little thing. Even just listening to this, go check out all of these shows and these funds that we've talked about, because it'll teach you a little bit more about what it means to be Muslim.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sadaf. And my listeners, pleasure. Thank you for tuning in.
That was Sadaf Hassan and Sarah Sahagian in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Sadaf and Sarah. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. To do that, let's turn things over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with labor news. The Alberta Federation of Labor warned that it is considering a possible general strike in response to the Alberta government's Bill 2. Bill 2 was passed in the legislature earlier this week and forced Alberta teachers back to work. For weeks, members of the Alberta Teachers Association were on the picket lines in what had been the largest teacher strike in the province's history. At issue was teacher pay, classroom sizes, and classroom safety. In passing Bill 2, Premier Danielle Smith and her government made continuing the strike illegal and used the notwithstanding clause in the Canadian Constitution to make the legislation difficult to challenge in court. The Alberta Federation of Labor says that Bill 2 attacks the fundamental right of workers to negotiate with their employer. While the Alberta Federation of Labor is threatening a general strike, no date has yet been set. Staying with labor news, the Alberta Union of Public Employees elected a new president at their convention last weekend. Sandra Azokar defeated longtime president Guy Smith on the second ballot. Azokar served as vice president of the union from 2006 to 2012 and was re-elected again to that role in 2021. For current priorities, Azokar said she would be focusing her efforts to support all union bargaining units that are currently at the negotiating table, including workers at Alberta Health Services. The Alberta Union of Public Employees disassociated itself from the National Canadian Labour Congress in 2006, and Azokar said that while she recognized the need to cooperate with the national labour movement, rejoining that organization was not a priority. In national news, this week marks the 30th anniversary of the 1995 Quebec separation referendum. That referendum nearly saw Quebec vote to separate from the rest of Canada. In a retrospective article, rabble parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg said that there were disturbing parallels between the political climate in 1995 and today. One parallel is that there is a liberal government in power in Ottawa that is seeking to dramatically cut spending, like the liberal government of Jean Chrétien had done in 1995. This, along with the separatist Parti Québécois rising in the polls, could set the stage for another separation referendum in Quebec. Nirenberg warns that unlike 30 years ago, today Canada is facing a hostile government in the U.S. under President Donald Trump, who has often expressed his wish to annex Canada. A separation referendum in one of Canada's largest provinces could create an opening that Donald Trump might seek to exploit. Also this week, King Charles announced that he would be revoking all royal titles from his brother Andrew, formerly known as Prince Andrew. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as he's now called, has been the subject of controversy for years due to his close relationship with American financier and convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. In an op-ed on Rabble, publisher Sarah Sahagian asks, given this latest controversy, does Canada need a royal family? Monarchy is not an institution based on merit. It is designed to avoid public accountability and represents a history of colonialism. On top of that, the British royal family is based in the United Kingdom an ocean away, and is hardly what people think of when they think of Canadian identity. Taking all this into account, Sahagian suggests maybe it's time to move on from monarchy. And finally, in environmental news, a recent David Suzuki Foundation report highlights the cost of liquid natural gas. Proponents of liquid natural gas say that it is somehow a clean alternative to other fossil fuels like coal, and they also tout the economic benefits as well. The report from the David Suzuki Foundation, however, highlights how natural gas must be extracted through a process called fracking, which requires the use and contamination of high volumes of water. The economic benefits don't seem to be there either. The research from the Suzuki Foundation shows that tax benefits for provincial and municipal governments in BC have consistently been 40 to 50% lower than what liquid natural gas industry experts have promised. As always, you can read about all the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.